It's better over here.
After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Let's go around the NFL in the loop style.
Why are you smiling?
Because I love football.
Brought to you by Quick Assist. Here's John Lopez and Reggie Adetula.
I'm going to tell you all about how much fun you're going to have this season.
On Houston Sports Leader, Sports Radio 610.
All right. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Time to go around the NFL as we welcome in our guy, Brandon K. Scott. Otherwise known as B. Scott from Hiram Clark. What's happening, man?
Yeah, man, I'm still just trying to process, just like everybody else. I'm trying to understand what took place Sunday night, why it took place, how it took place, and where we go from here. Like,
you're talking about the flashing lights that happened early in the game? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, all of it. All of it. The flashing lights to the very end, to where it was dead ass silent. Yeah, man, I'm trying to get there.
It wasn't silent. That's one thing I can tell you for sure. The Lions fans were chanting in there. It wasn't silent. The Lions fans were chanting in there. That was a frustrating part.
They affected the game.
Yeah, they sure did.
Early on, somebody said on the broadcast, on the Sunday Night Football broadcast, it's 30% Lions fans in here.
Ain't no way.
And I was like, well, I think that maybe they were trying to be generous.
They were.
Like, I think they were trying to not throw Houston under the bus by just pointing out there are a lot of Lions fans without trying to say, hey, Houston ain't showed up the way they're supposed to. I think that's what they were trying to do. But I wish I could have whispered into the, talking to the IFB and been like, yo, That's a regular occurrence.
or go like this.
Yeah.
Point 40.
probably higher, but also anytime the Texans play anything close to a legacy franchise or a franchise that is, like in the Patriots case, a franchise that has had recent success, I wouldn't call them a legacy franchise per se.
No, and funny enough, they did not become a national power that you would imagine when you get like a dynastic run. Mm-hmm. But anyways.
But when they came here.
Yeah.
When they came here, it was all of us like, is this New England and Houston? I didn't know geographically they were the same.
It's a long way.
But you would not know it based off of how the turnout looks and what the jerseys look like in the concourse and in the stands.
All right.
Sometimes it's just hard to admit, maybe we're not as good as we thought we were. But sometimes you got to admit it.
As a city?
Yeah.
Or as a team?
As a city.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, we might be talking about both of them.
Well, let's go around the NFL. Brought to you by Quick Assist. Tired of the hassle of selling your tickets? Say goodbye to the stress and let their experts get you the best price. Download Quick Assist from your app store today and they'll handle the rest. QUICKASYST. Quick Assist, your ticket. Everywhere. All right, we go around the NFL, and I'd like to start here. The Chicago Bears have fired their offensive coordinator, Shane Waldron. They promote Thomas Brown, who, a name that is somewhat familiar here. But Shane Waldron just starting in his first year as offensive coordinator, and seeing a offensive coordinator fired is always interesting when you've had conversations about the similar around here. This feels like one that was destined to happen, though. Shane Waldron being fired there.
Yeah, so I know we're going to get to some Texans thoughts later on in the hour, but it did make me think about how I'd much more prefer to be in this situation where you've got questions about the offensive coordinator. You want to demand more and demand better from the offensive coordinator, from the offensive play caller, but you'll stop short of, and I know that we've heard this out there, fire Bobby Slowick and all of that, but reasonably speaking, you stop short of, hey, this guy needs to be fired.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's, hey, this dude needs to get his head out of his ass.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily, hey, you got to just throw him to the curb. Whereas with the Bears, they were able to acknowledge very early on, we don't have time to wait on this. We don't have time to allow the offensive coordinator to ruin the rookie quarterback that we just invested our entire future in.
Yeah.
We just don't have time to do that. So it's a very Bears thing to happen as well. Like, they don't develop quarterbacks.
Correct.
They don't do offense well. They haven't, and I don't know how long. This is just so on par, so on brand. And I point out, too, the two offensive coordinators that have been fired so far in season are Luke Getsy and now Shane Waldron today.
Both Bears associated?
Not just both Bears associated, but both the two most recent Bears offensive coordinators.
Yeah.
Like the dude that they just got rid of went and got a new job and got and he was gotten rid of immediately.
Yeah.
The guy that they brought in to replace him was seen the door shortly thereafter, and it's very Bears. Duh Bears.
Yep, yep, yep. And look, the Bears probably could have known this if they went and did a little bit of interviewing around Shane Waldron's last job. So Jackson Smith and Jigba got drafted to the Seattle Seahawks. He spent his rookie year with Shane Waldron as his OC. And CHGO, which is a, you know, kind of like a podcast,
I'm familiar.
Podcast hub in Chicago, they had Jackson Smith and Jigba on, I think this was at the Super Bowl or what have you. And he was asked, you know, about, you know, what he would say to Bears fans about their new offensive coordinator.
Bears fans are super interested about the offensive coordinator coming in, Shane Waldron. What can you tell them about who they just hired to try to get this offense where it needs to go?
This is live?
Yeah. We're not live. We're not live.
I'm playing. good luck to y'all. I mean, he's a great person.
He's a great person.
He's got a good personality.
Man, I remember this happening, and I just don't remember it being that bad.
Yeah, yeah, dude, they teed it up, too. What can you tell us?
Said, it wasn't like, is this live?
Is this live?
They teed it up.
Are
for
you
him.
Wearing a wire?
He could have said anything. Instead, he went, good luck. Good luck.
Instead of actually leading with, he's a great person.
Yeah.
Like, which we would have already probably read too much into or read a lot into.
Correct.
Like, what? Yeah. You're telling me what kind of person he is? I just asked you about his job.
Yeah.
Like lead with he's a good person, yeah, and then work your way down. He's like,
well, clearly he did not believe that. It took him a while to come up with that one. Yeah. He was searching and he was like, I guess he's a good person.
He's an okay guy.
Man got to feed his family. I wish him well.
Yeah,
that's what it sounded like.
He said, "Good luck."
Yeah,
that was his ultimate conclusion. Was good luck to you.
Good luck.
And I just that feels like it needs to be considered when you start talking about firing offensive coordinator. That was the starting point, and it ultimately got to a point where the Bears ranked in the bottom of the NFL in points scored being 24th, yards per carry 28th, yards per pass 30th, total yards 30th, third downs 31st, yards per play 34th. Like, that is the level of play that gets you fired at offensive coordinator.
I saw something that said they have gone 23 offensive drives without scoring a touchdown.
Yeah.
And mind you, they drafted quarterback number one overall. He looks like not good right now.
Yeah.
And part of it, I think, is what they're doing. And part of it, I think, is him. I don't know if it's confidence or if it's just deflated. I don't know what it is exactly, but it ain't working. It's not looking good right now. They have not scored a touchdown in 23 straight offensive possessions. And they also loaded up on receiver, on weapons. Yeah. Like they did. I know Ryan Poles is an attention whore, but to his credit, he did everything you could possibly do to try to surround this young guy with as much talent as he possibly could, except that one thing, and that's hire a capable offensive coordinator.
Well, and I think for a defensive coach. For a defensive coach. A defensive-minded coach often is the most important thing.
Who's offensive coordinator who you just had to fire before? So you've already had but you already had the issue, right? Like, it's the second offensive coordinator under this regime, and he doesn't last. He didn't last 10 games.
Well, the story is, if it comes down to we've got to surround our franchise quarterback that we have a lot of confidence in with all the right people, and it comes down to coordinator or quarterback, it's the coordinator 100% of the time.
Oh, yeah. No,
100% of the time.
Many times it's actually the player over the quarterback now, like the star player, of the coordinator in this current iteration in the NFL, especially with the pay reaching the levels that it has. I think for me, it's just the juxtaposition of this is how bad it has to be for in-season firing, right? Compared to, I know that there's a lot of concerns about Bobby Slowey. I honestly am having concerns about if this is the right scheme altogether that you have here. But the idea of like firing mid-season feels like a bridge that it's such a drastic maneuver, and it comes when you have just literally bottom three in many categories and you started out in a bad place.
Here's where it gets interesting and dicey. Do you do nothing? Do you maybe change play calling duties? Do you maybe what Reggie just said, you know, tweak the system itself?
See, I don't buy into that. I think play calling needs to be better, 100%. Like, I'm not going to sugarcoat that. But I don't think you like systems really. Like,
well, I don't know that you can change the system.
But change the emphasis of what they're doing.
Sure, you could do that. But even just the premise of, hey, it's the system. Like, we were just not that long
really
ago
good
praising the system. And by the way, this system works really well across the league. Like, how is it that you get to Houston and you get to Bobby Slowick and all of a sudden this system that works for everybody else don't work for you?
Well, the offensive line ain't everywhere else.
But see, that's right. But that, to me, that's not a system issue. That's a personnel issue.
Okay.
You got the wrong dudes. You can't run the system that everybody else is running and everybody else is running well and it's supposed to complement or be quarterback friendly.
Yeah.
It's a quarterback friendly system to a good quarterback. Not a quarterback friendly system for one of those, you know, has-beens that would be a backup for the for the 49ers. I'm trying to think of some of those backups before Brock
Nick
Purdy.
Mullins.
Burt Head or, you know.
Yeah, CJ Beathard.
That's what I'm trying to go. it's not for those guys or even for Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
Like, this is CJ Stroud in a system that's already supposed to be like the same system that Matt Schaub ran, the one that made Matt Schaub look probably a little bit better than he actually was.
Sure.
And you're telling me that CJ can't run it? No, I refuse to believe that. I think you got the wrong offensive lineman. And again,
sir,
an offensive coordinator who does need to get his head out of his tail.
Okay, but you got the quarterback. You got the system that you believe in, right?
Yes.
Well, then it's maybe a messaging problem, which we talked about a little while ago, and that would be the coordinator.
No, there's a personnel problem for sure, but I think that once you have a personnel problem, then you maximize what you have with your personnel for the time being because you can't make that shift.
Yeah. The tough part about it, especially in the immediacy of this game, this Lions game that they just lost, is that I've had a lot of complaints about Bobby Slowick, and I think rightfully so a lot of us have had questions for sure. But I did not feel like he was a top three issue in the Lions game. Like, to his credit and to the team's credit, they were scheming guys open.
Yeah.
Like, you want to tell me that the interception that C.J. Stroud threw that was supposed to be a Tank Dell touchdown was a part of the scheme, system, or play calling? Absolutely not. You want to tell me that after Joe Mixon gets you first and goal at the 3 and you can't punch it in, you got to kick a field goal, that was a system problem? No, that's a Juice Scruggs getting a holding penalty from the 3-yard line problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, to me, we can have our complaints about Bobby Slowick. They're justified, but we got to keep it all in context.
No, and I think that is well said. The problem is, I think that I've gotten to a point where I have made it so that those are not things that are fixable. And so I'll talk about the things that I feel like you can't adjust to fix around those things.
Yeah,
but
that's a good point.
It is worth noting. Mm-hmm. I think you make a good point that we have to start with noting the fact that the bigger issues are here. Those just feel like, as much as it's fixable, those ones feel like those aren't necessarily big, majorly changeable.
Whenever I have issue, I got one friend that, like, I'll be like, man, this is going wrong, whatever. And they'll be like, don't suck. Stop being bad. Like, sometimes the solution can be complicated, and sometimes you can oversimplify it and just say, hey, you know what, just be better.
Yeah.
Stop being bad at this.
Well, yeah.
Like, is your friend D'Amico Ryans? My bad. I didn't realize that you had it like that.
Hey, look. If there's anything that I wish D'Amico Ryans could say, just blunt, point blank, when he talks to the media today,
don't suck.
We need to not suck.
He's basically said that, though.
He really has. It
just, we just need to be better.
Yeah.
I needed him to say it verbatim. Don't suck.
Something that your opponent's head coach said verbatim is that Cooper Rush is going to be the starter again at quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Their options are 8th-year veteran Cooper Rush, who 5-2 now as a starter, even though I don't believe in quarterback starting like wins or losses necessarily, because he is a don't mess it up quarterback. And those wins came up. Well, he had one game against, I think, the Minnesota Vikings where he actually he was throwing the football well.
Yeah.
Other than that, it's just like, don't mess it up, and you have a team that is capable of not messing stuff up. That Cowboys team right now, it don't matter if you mess up or not, brother. You got to go get out the mud if you want to be the quarterback.
They mess up.
But they go with Cooper Rush instead of turning to the dude that they gave up some draft capital for and the guy who has not played enough football, Trey Lance. Who would you rather see as the Texans, Cooper Rush or Trey Lance?
I would rather see Cooper Rush because I feel like at the very least Trey Lance offers a dynamic that is harder to prepare for. It's like, it's just, there is a physical matchup and a physical component that you have to account for that is different and just not, frankly, not there the same with Cooper Rush. So I'll say Cooper Rush. But even beyond that, Like, if you wanted to take, I know sometimes y'all do silver linings, you'll take a saving grace from a loss or you know, a negative thing. I would say, hey, if you could make, particularly in the first half, if you could make Jared Goff look like that, Jared Goff, who is like a borderline MVP candidate this year and was, or at least was playing like that going into that game, if you can make Jared Goff look the way that he did in the first half, God bless Cooper Rush or Trey Lance or whoever, the Cowboys try to trot out there. So I feel good about where the Texans are defensively versus whatever they faced on Monday night.
I think that's very fair. That's around the NFL here on In the Loop. We got our guy B. Scott hanging out, which means coming up next, it's time to get into B. Scott's thoughts. We'll do that next on Sports Radio 610. It's better
over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
It's going down. H-Town, Howard Clark, B. Scott.
B. Scott from Howard Clark. Yeah. Yeah,
that's something to get you in the right mood.
If you need it, if you need that, just kind of, you know, tap into the arm. If you need that boost, B. Scott from Hiram Clark, he got it for you on a Tuesday. Time for B. Scott's thoughts in the loop on Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, Figgy Fig, Reginald Attitude, and of course the aforementioned B. Scott.
So I want to get into this first, and I didn't even put this on the dot, but this is where my mind is at right now. The biggest concern, or this is how I'll put it. The part that is most concerning about where the Texans are right now for me really is, what is it doing to CJ Stroud? And I'm one of these folks that still believes, but is not in the business of making excuses for CJ Stroud. Like, still believe in CJ Stroud. I don't feel like what we saw last year was fool's gold. Even a lot of what we've seen this year, honestly, like in the midst of the bad, there have also been so many flashes of just transparent, obvious talent. It is there. So there is no need to question that part. The part that I'm questioning and the part that is making me uncomfortable with watching the Texans right now is, what is the impact that all of this, from the poor pass protection and also the inability to really run the ball consistently, right? Because it's like, how do you help a struggling quarterback be able to run the football, right? Like, that helps any quarterback, even when it's doing well.
Correct.
So not having that, the play calling being, let's just to be generous, call it less than ideal. Not great. I think it's fair. How is all of that impacting CJ Stroud? And Reggie, you mentioned something interesting about Bob, as it pertains to Bobby Slowick, in the kind of in the break before we actually got back on air.
Made an interesting point.
but think about this. Where is Bobby Slowick's OG?
Yes, that is how I termed it.
That's how you termed it with Bobby Slowick. What's the residual for, what's the trickle down on CJ Stroud? Where's his OG? Who might that be? When it comes to, hey, we got to reel this in. We got to get this right. Like, we feel like Bobby Slowick is either frazzled or needs to get his head out of his tail, or just has
a lot of work on him, man. Right. He got a lot in the inbox.
Whatever the case may be. So who is the voice in Bobby's ear? Who is the voice in CJ's ear? And can we trust it? Do we know? First of all, do we know if it exists?
Yeah.
Like, is there a voice beyond just those voices themselves that exist? And then can you trust it? Like, where is it at? And what is the impact ultimately on the development of your young quarterback? Because I'm not as much worried about the Texans in this season. And like, can they win the division and go to the play? Like, they're going to do all of that. I feel pretty confident they're still going to do all of that. But is the quarterback trending in the right direction or the opposite? And that's the part that's making me really uncomfortable.
Answer. You know the answer.
I feel like I do know the answer, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't like the answer. Yeah,
and I know they're telling CJ Stroud to trust things and step up in the pocket. Don't go back. The thing that got me the most, that I went a legitimate, B. Scott, is when he starts he wasn't even really getting out of the pocket against the Jets. He was just going straight back and crumbling. That was
bad. That was a sign that it is affecting him, that he's seeing ghosts, hearing ghosts, whatever it may be. And that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like the effect on CJ Stroud was like right in front of us. He never would have done that.
Well, and also, so that's a point on seeing ghosts. Yeah. I'll make one about like just judgment. Overall, mm-hmm. we mentioned the interception that was intended for Tank, should have been a touchdown.
Correct.
A gimme, it felt like.
Agreed.
Or should have been.
Yeah.
Judgment there, awful. Like, let it rip. What are you doing? That's one example. Mm-hmm. A lesser example is that, y'all remember the sack where he tries to spin out, tries to spin away from the defensive lineman? And it's like, who do you think you are? Where do you think you're going?
Yeah.
And we've seen him do that before, but in this case, it seemed like just a misjudgment of where you are on the field and the likelihood of you actually
being able. And how fast he goes to it.
Right. How fast he goes to it. And
you know what it feels like to me? That is a dude who's like, hey, man, I don't know if I can or should trust everybody else. Okay, I need to have the responsibility. It's what I termed the Superman complex.
Yeah,
right? You get to a point where you're like, all right, I'm the quarterback. I'm the leader guy. I'll take on more responsibility and more responsibility and more responsibility. And there's something to be said about leadership or what have you and understanding that you are not Superman. And that you can't do all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm going to spin out and do all this. Is like, who the hell do you think you are? Well, he thinks he's Superman in that moment. And I have to be the guy who carries this.
Yeah. And that's the part that's troubling. Like, so do we have a bit of, not a talent issue, but an identity crisis of sorts with CJ Stroud? Because Rodney Harrison asked him this, like a real quick interview before the game. Hey, what do you need to do for the Texans to win tonight? What do you need to do for your team to be? He said, I need to be myself. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Who is yourself right now? Like, I would have known or felt like I knew what that meant around this time last year. Who is it now?
Mm-hmm.
Who is yourself right now? And how much of it is it him or is it the surrounding, you know, the environment around him? And that's the part that I feel like is got to be the most concerning part for Texans fans right now.
Yeah, for sure. I think we have that on the docket for 1P, right?
Like, yes, just, we did.
How do you get that confidence back that it seems like he has lacked? And maybe that's not the right word, but I think you get what I'm trying to get to, right? Because mm-hmm. there's something that is, even if it's just the glint in CJ's eyes, there's something that has been taken or that is not there in the same capacity as it had been prior, even at the start of this season. And how do you restore that in the course of the remainder of the season is something that we really got to get to the bottom of.
But y'all know what's really weird about it, though, is that a lot of this game against the Lions, it felt like it was coming back.
Mm-hmm. And then like, it left just as fast.
That's the part.
That's another sign.
I don't get that.
As soon as it started going bad, he never would have been like that before.
Yeah, it just, that first half, man, if even when, and this is another one of my
issues.
That
first half was. That was the CJ we've all seen.
It was, and even in the midst of it, I can remember feeling like, man, these three field goal drives are ass.
But it wasn't necessarily like you could see CJ was balling.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Even in the midst of that, I'm like, but you know what?
Yeah.
They're doing the stuff that was talked about in the media throughout the week, the stuff that was in that players only meeting article that mm-hmm. Jonathan Alexander wrote for the Houston Chronicle, like, CJ Stroud talking about needing to go out there and have more fun. I know that Clint Sterner doesn't really like the rhetoric around, hey, we need to be more loose and be more fun. But it did feel like, however you want to look at it, it was helping them.
Yeah.
Or it was having at least some kind of positive effect in the first half of that game on Sunday night. Where did it go? What happened?
Quickly.
Yeah. And it felt like just, you know, maybe it's throwing a pick to like, you know, promptly to start the second half.
Yeah.
I don't know. But, like, it was really the tale, not just the tale of two halves, but the tale of two quarterbacks in one, which really, really, really concerns me.
Yeah, and that's the big concern, right? Regardless of what the season is, that's the dude that this era of Texans football mm-hmm. hinges on, right? We could talk about this team and how disappointing it would be for them to underachieve and only win the AFC South and maybe not do a whole bunch in the postseason, but if CJ Stroud is somehow long term affected by this particular season of poor pass protection and so on and so forth, that would be the real tragedy of all this. It's one of the reasons why people lamented not making a move at the trade deadline, even understanding that you're not going to fix the entirety of this offensive line. It's just like the stakes are so damn high, right? Yeah. Shout out to De La Soul. Stakes is high here.
Yep.
You know?
100%. Now, this would be one of my other points that I was going to get to. I think it's okay, and this ties in with CJ. I think it's okay to admit that perhaps we were wrong about this Texans team. Like, we came into this thing thinking, okay, they went from second tier AFC mm-hmm. team to, hey, they're right there with the Chiefs, with the Ravens, with the Bills, with the teams that they're chasing.
Yeah.
They ain't. So I think it's okay to realize that and to admit that. I don't think that would be the worst thing in the world for them to win a division. Let's say win one playoff game and then lose in the divisional round like they did last year or something to that effect. That's not what we want, mm-hmm. but that wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. To negatively impact the quarterback's growth and development, I mean, that's what we're talking about with the Bears right now, right? The reason why they're about to be on their third offensive coordinator in 2 years. Like, that's what that's about, because they knew even before they hired this guy, and certainly once they fired Shane Waldron, that, hey, our future is invested in this dude. Similar situation over here. Like, you can afford to have a disappointing season where you just make the playoffs in a pitiful AFC South.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot afford to take steps back with your quarterback.
Well, and that's why I feel like there should be a sense of urgency, desperation, whatever you want to call it, because you can't let that happen. You can't say, you know what, let's just get through the year. Maybe we'll surprise some people. Maybe CJ will work some magic. Maybe this, maybe that, because the long-term, you know, the downside of the long-term effect on CJ Stroud, you got to be more urgent about not avoiding that. You know, and that's why, who knows, you know, how it's going to be, whether it's shifting play calling, shifting approach, more personnel, whatever it may be. You can't afford to risk that.
Here's what I love, though.
Okay.
It is still, we are still in a spot where they control the destiny and they still control the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, only but so much, because none of us think this offensive line is good.
Mm-hmm.
So we feel like they're stuck with that. But it did look better.
It sure did.
It did look better on Sunday, and this was our first run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So they are still in a position. I know it's all doom and gloom right now.
It did look better for a half, though.
For a half.
And that was the thing that I was wondering about Patterson at left guard, right? The idea that when we were still thinking that it was going to be Patterson then slotted back in at left guard was like, okay, how much of that is the new you know, player bump? You know how they talk about in, like, in football or basketball, mm-hmm. here's a new coach bump, and, like, people play better for a period. Like, is that the new left guard bump, and then other teams get a little bit of a feel for it and then are able to break it down, right? And I don't know if that's fully the case with mm-hmm. the offensive line, but one of the things you were talking about that kind of broke down the second half, you start getting holds at the left guard position. This time it's Juice Scruggs. You start seeing that, like, does that hold up? Does that better play hold up over a sustained period of time, or was that a short time bounce?
Yeah, it's an issue. Like, there's just no way to work around it, man. Honestly, mm-hmm. it is an issue to put a pin in and to keep an eye on. But one of these things that we do when a team collapses like this, the way the Texans did, mm-hmm. is we focus on the collapse. We focus on the fact that they don't know how to close out games, apparently, or that they have this propensity to play in these one-score games, whether they win them or lose them. They're either winning ugly or they're losing late, right? This is still the same team that dominated the Detroit Lions in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that did happen. Mm-hmm. We don't get to pretend like it didn't happen just because we didn't like the result.
Sans Will Anderson Jr., sans Nico Collins.
Yeah.
It happened. So that is in there somewhere.
Correct.
It is up to them, and they still have enough time to do it, right? And I think it benefits them to be in the AFC South, where they'll win some games, mm-hmm. and winning will buy you time, but it is up to them to figure out how to tap more into first half Texans and not second half Texans.
And you're right, but damn it, that's what I've been mad about all year long.
Yeah.
Because every they're getting the win, and I'm like, but that's the fullness of this team.
Yeah,
they haven't shown it to us particularly all game, right? We'll get a little taste.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get taste to the point of making the Detroit Lions look like they on the ropes, and we just don't get the whole thing. It's like, you know, you go to the Sam's Club and they get you the little sample, and you're like, all right, let's buy the whole thing. No, we can't buy the whole thing.
Yeah, but you know what? Even in the first half, like, and I was going to mention this, first half, we focus on the collapse. First half, how about instead of 3 field goal drives?
Well, sure.
It's just 2 field goal drives.
And a touchdown.
And when Joe Mixon sets you up with first and goal on the 3, you punch it in.
Mm-hmm.
Then we're not even having this conversation.
But then 1-2 bad things happen, and it all comes apart.
Yeah. They got to figure that out.
And that's the issue.
That how they respond to
adversity,
that's something that they got to figure. Because that is also the markings of a winning franchise or a winning team.
I mean,
right?
Look at Detroit.
Look at Detroit. Look at the Chiefs. Look at teams. Look at the Ravens. Look at different teams around the league, mm-hmm. who do have some pelts on the wall. They figure it out when
the quote-unquote rubber meets the road.
Oh, man. B. Scott's thoughts. 11:20 on a Tuesday. This feels good to have these kind of conversations. But we're not done. He's still here for one more segment on the hour. Let's get into what's popping, where I'd like to get into the Rockets' brain of Brandon Scott after they got a victory over the Wizards last night. But it's not just about that. There's some other things that the Rockets' name have come up with around the NBA sphere that I want to talk to him about. We'll do it next.
The biggest stories in sports and entertainment. Sports Radio 610 style. In the Loop presents What's Poppin'.
All right, let's get into what's popping here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. And we got our guy B. Scott still hanging out with us on a Tuesday. Shout out to everybody who is invested in the NBA Cup. NBA Cup starts tonight. NBA Cup play.
Lord.
In-season tournament, now known as Let's the Emirates go. NBA Cup. You'll go. See the if you watch TNT, I believe, tonight, or if you have League Pass, if you're a real basketball sicko, you will see the special courts
which I do.
Come out. I do as well. You'll see the basketball courts come out and all sorts of things. The Rockets won't get a chance to tap into the NBA Cup games until Friday when they get their first NBA Cup game. But shout out to the NBA Cup. All right, do you guys believe in this in-season tournament as something that can do any level of generation of interest?
So the one thing I'll say about it is I didn't need it personally. So like this was
it wasn't for you. You weren't the demographic.
Nah. Yeah. So I was just like, what are we doing? What's this about? But to its credit, I will acknowledge that last year the guys did seem to get up for it.
They did.
Like for better or worse,
get those defending champs, man. Them Lakers, man.
Raise the banner.
And it seemed to be all about like, hey, let's get this $500,000 for the guys who don't make $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
Or who only make $500,000. Let's double somebody's salary with this tournament. And so whatever the motivate, I don't care what I've always said this. I don't care what motivates you so long as you are motivated.
Sure.
But I did appreciate last year that it seemed like there was some excitement toward it. Now, again, I didn't need it. Like, I'm just going to watch hoop. No matter if it's an NBA Cup, if you dress up the floor or whatever it is, like, I don't need all of that. But apparently they did, and it did work. Now
I got that extra pelt, man.
Now, do I care who wins the NBA Cup? Like, do I need the Rockets to bring home a cup?
Bring home the cup.
No.
Let me ask you this.
Absolutely not.
Does it ever have a chance to be significant?
Yes. It's going to take a generation. I look at European soccer, which is what the NBA is.
That's where I was
looking,
going with it.
Right? Like, and the
Champions Cup going on right now.
The reason why, I don't even think it's going to be a Champions Cup thing. I think it's going to play a lot more like the EFL Cup, right? Like the Carabao Cup. And if you know what I'm talking about, then you know. And if you don't even worry about it. I don't need to explain it. But you'll get what I mean when I say this. This type of NBA Cup is not for the best teams in the league. Mm-hmm. I think it exists for them, the coaches that are on the hot seat. I might not be able to get a championship, but I can get a trophy somewhere.
Yeah.
We can get an NBA. Like, I think that and for the fan bases that are like, hey, man, you sick of people talking about how you ain't got no rings? Get you some level of hardware. Like, it will exist as another goal in a sport where we're losing the importance of the regular season. And we're seeing this in college football, right?
Well, that's why
because
they brought it in.
We're making fewer and fewer accomplishments and achievements notable. And so when there's only one achievement that matters, it's a lot easier to lose interest. When you have more achievements that matter, think of college football when it's like, hey, but getting to the Rose Bowl matters to us, even if we don't win a championship, right?
25 years.
But I think it'll take a generation of folks for that to matter to, because right now it has been ingrained in us that none of this other stuff matters.
Yeah, well, when my son, who's 9, when he's in his mid to late 30s, I think he'll care more about the NBA Cup than I do, right? For example, or just make it whoever the NBA fan is of his age. I do buy into that. The way I look at it more so is, as we notice the NFL trying to take over Christmas and really just getting really gangster with everybody.
That's right.
Right?
We want all the corners.
As they do that, to me, the NBA Cup does have a chance to be a bigger, you know how Christmas Day used to be the NBA day. That's when the NBA season would start for a lot of people, especially the casual fan. I think this could be that times 10. Like, hey, just instead of just one day, then it's this week or two or however long
Tuesdays
it is.
Tuesdays and Fridays in November, baby.
Be in front of your TV. Because for one thing, and I can say this after watching it last year, you know for sure that's a time that they're going to give you maximum effort. If that's a thing that you question, and I don't always do that, but I know a lot of people do. I'm just acknowledging the reality of it. If you question their want to and their desire and how hard they play, they don't play defense and all of that kind of stuff.
Load management.
load management. They're not doing that during the NBA.
Yeah.
Because it does matter at least enough to them then to put in maximum effort or as close to maximum effort as you're going to get. So I think it has a chance, is at least in terms of, you know, from a spectator standpoint, to replace what Christmas Day used to be for the NBA, which I think is now going to be taken over by the NFL. And you know, the NFL is going to take whatever they want.
Yep.
Gangsters like that.
That's right. That's exactly who they are. National Football League of gangsters. Speaking of effort and energy, your Rockets. And specifically, Alperen Şengün.
Yes.
They get a W against the Wizards, which was expected, 107-92. But it really, like, the inspiring part of this was Alperen Şengün with a 27-17 night. And in 31 minutes, he just did all of the things, especially down on the block. Even triple teamed at one point, going up and doing the damn thing in a night where Fred VanVleet doesn't play. And Jalen Green was fine in the course of this, but it was just a lot of Alperen Şengün doing what he does and showing that he is the foundational piece on this
team. Yeah, Jalen Green, I mean, his whole deal, like, he was kind of turning the ball. It was a little bit of a sloppy game for Jalen Green, obviously, mm-hmm. but Alperen Şengün from said go. Like, he starts the game yamming it on folks and had his way with Alex Saar. Like, I don't know what the French did to Alperen Şengün.
He gets after him.
And y'all let me know, because I know, ooh, Reggie, I know you're well read.
Yeah. Are there some geopolitical things?
I was about to say this.
Turkish?
Lopez, you are a well-traveled folk, but I don't know what the Turkish and the French got going on, but Alperen Şengün has taken something very, very personally about whenever.
For a Frenchman.
Hold on.
When he sees Victor Wembanyama or Alex Saar, it is apparently on sight.
There is a whole Wikipedia page entitled France Turkey Relations. So, you know what? We're actually going to have to, I'm going to do some reading.
It makes you wonder. It's like, hey, man, like,
it started back in the 1600s.
It probably did.
Way before either of these born in the mid 2000s cats was born.
Yeah, man. Jalen Green, as you mentioned, 6 turnovers.
Yeah, man.
2 assists
with the ball.
He was having to operate as the primary ball handler. And I think this is one of the highlights that I took from this game, and being a negative Nancy like I can, is just, oh yeah, again, this team does not have point guards. Mm-hmm. And even with Fred VanVleet, kind of feels like he's stepping back in importance in some ways with this team.
Especially for when last night happens, right? I don't have him.
Exactly. Like, he is important to that, but especially if he's not knocking down the threes like he did. Like, it was starting to feel kind of weird with him getting the minutes that he does, but mm-hmm. he's so important because you need someone that actually handles the basketball and kind of keeps everything organized, and it feels like he's the only guy that does that at a high level.
Yeah, so that part, though, is just a theme with the Rockets ever since Fred VanVleet got here.
Yes.
They just have not had adequate backup point guard play for the last year and some change now. It's just a thing with them. But kind of, I guess maybe to spin it to more of a positive way, the thing that stood out to me last night was that Reed Shepherd did step up and seemed more aggressive or assertive and confident in himself.
I mean, slightly, right?
Slightly. Yeah. At least in the beginning of the game, he was taking shots. Mm-hmm. And you just need to see that increase. You need mm-hmm. to see that go up like a whole nother level.
Well, he got himself 17 minutes to be able to do that. And I think he was running with Aaron Holiday a little bit, who took some of that responsibility. For me, I know that Kelly Eco was tweeting that he wants to see Reed hunt his shots. And I think that's fair. I would like it very much more, though. And I think I'm hoping for things that the Rockets don't do, and I need to be better about this. I would like to see more assists and more people setting up Reed Shepherd to be a catch-and-shoot guy. There's not enough catch-and-shoot on this team. That's just not the way this team has been situated thus far.
They don't have that.
And well, so, they did it again. They didn't have three-point shooting again last night. I mean, it's been kind of the ongoing thing, and that's what Reggie's talking about. But I'll tell you what, ever since Udoka said, hey, you need to be a little better shape, Şengün's been on it a little bit.
Hey, Udoka knows how to give you the right little kick in the ass. Yeah. And that's exactly what it seemed like Alperen Şengün needed.
Yeah.
He's needed this before mm-hmm. in his career. Like, I want to say it was year 2. So 2 seasons ago, same thing. Comes in a little bit out of shape.
Yeah.
The Rockets are out there starting Bruno Fernando.
Yeah. Forgot about that.
Over Alperen Şengün. Yeah. You want to send a message. Tell somebody, even just slightly indicate that Bruno Fernando might be preferable over you and see if you don't get serious. And that's exactly what he did. So, yeah, no, I mean, that is the big takeaway. Yeah. You're right, though. Like, in terms of the A topic from the Rockets game last night, it's that Alperen Şengün, and this is in back-to-back games now, if I'm not mistaken now.
Yeah, 27.
Exactly, 27 in back-to-back games, where now Alperen Şengün more so
looks like Alperen Şengün. And then even Jalen Green, I will point out, even on an off night, also looks like he is still taking that leap that you wanted him to take.
Absolutely. In addition to Tari Eason being the ball of energy and effort and chaos that he continues to be. But yeah, Rockets got another victory last night. I didn't even get to the spicy one, which is the talk about, you know, the possibility of Giannis wanting a trade and all those things. Come you know who gets to have that fun?
H-Town Hoops?
H-Town Hoops podcast, sure. H-Town Hoops podcast hosted by B. Scott and Adam Spillane, who we will talk to about that tomorrow.
Yes.
B. Scott, it is always a pleasure to have you in. We appreciate you giving us some of your time.
Appreciate y'all, man. And I'm headed straight here to do the H-Town Hoops podcast, so make sure y'all check that out if you do want to hear about what we think about the possibility of a Giannis trade or not. Come hear from us.
There you go.
H-Town Hoops podcast, where you get your podcast, baby.
That is a professional tease by the consummate professional himself, Brandon K. Scott from Hiram Clark.
You teed that up. You teed that up for me. I appreciate it.
Hey, man. The teamwork indeed makes the dream work. All right. You're listening to In the Loop right here on Sports Radio 610. And speaking of teamwork, it feels like there's some things that even when they start getting it together, some things slip out of line. So is the weak link in this, is it the O-line or is it Bobby Slowick? Lopez has a case for each next. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.